Oh, hi, I'm Helen Wang. I'm from the Department of Communication at the University of Buffalo, the State University of New York. So I'm here to present to you some of the work we've done to evaluate the show, a Hulu hit show called East Los High. And so we've heard the previous three presentations on photonovela. And if you will, you can imagine East Los High having to be not only kind of a web novella, and in addition to have content rolled out on 9 other digital platforms to create a story world. So I'm basically taking you on a high-speed rail. You're flipping through the photo book, the photo book, like maybe a few hundred pages per second. But this show is extraordinary, and it's purposely designed, developed to promote pregnancy prevention, safe sex among young Latino Americans. I'm very excited to share with you some of our research. I have no conflict of interest to disclose here. So before I get to it, the storyline is set in a fictional high school in East Los Angeles, where it's predominantly Hispanic Latino population, and with a lot of challenges in terms of these health issues, but also social issues and economic issues. And so I will show you the trailer of the first season that premiered on Hulu in the summer of 2013. Let me see if this one's loaded. The room just got a little hot here. And you can imagine the kids, watching this this show. So the show has now gone through 3 seasons. The third season premiered in the summer of 2015. And They've earned 3 Daytime Emmy nominations and winning other awards as well. Most recently, I think Sentinel Award given out for really producing entertainment programs for health promotion. And I'm not on the production side, but I'd like to point out 3 unique features about this program. The first one being Latino authenticity. And this is actually the very first English language program created by all Latino writers, producers, and cast to address issues within the Latino community in the United States. And the comment from one of the producers, Carlos Portugal. You know, he says, "I don't want to create characters telling stories about my community that sort of really according to the stereotype of, you know, Latinos appearing as gardeners and maids and gangsters. That's what they appear in mainstream entertainment." So this is very authentic because this is coming from the storytellers in the same community. And they also use a different way to tell the story. So not only have sort of still images, but also a variety of media platforms to create a story world, like I was saying earlier. So there's the cornerstone as the web novella, the Hulu original series that premieres in the summer, and basically it's almost like what you watch TV online. And this is the niche market for especially the young generation, second or third generations of immigrants, you know, from Spanish-speaking countries, right? So they grow up speaking English. They have this kind of cultural influence, but they don't necessarily speak the language, and there's a lot of issues within their community that are really unoverlooked, neglected, and that's why it's in English. And then in addition to the Hulu original series, at the end of first season, the viewers will be directed to the East Los High website, which is just, you know, eastloshigh.com, where additional content are provided in 9 different digital platforms. For example, there will be extended scenes from the original show. Where the example I put up there on the upper left corner is, you know, one of the main characters, Maya, is a runaway, you know, girl and sort of became part of this family and sort of stole the boyfriend of her cousins, and she was raped by her mother's boyfriend, and this is the scene where she went to the health clinic with her aunt, who really encouraged her to get tested. And then they got into the conversation about, oh, do you actually know how to correctly use a condom? And she said, of course, I've been to, you know, the real world, I know a few things. And then the counselor said, you know, why don't you show me? And then, of course, in the extended scene where it shows, like, she thought she knew how to use a condom correctly, and there were some things she didn't really know or didn't do correctly. And then so that's the additional sort of health educational information embedded in the extended scenes. And there's a high school newspaper, so like a digital version of print media. There's, you know, vlogs, which is a video blog from another main character, Ceci, who is a very sexually active teenager and became pregnant, struggled with a relationship with an abusive boyfriend, and had to go through different options, you know, really contemplate about whether or not she would go for abortion or adoption or actually decide to become a teen mom and raise a child, you know, give birth and raise a child. And she did go through all the options and seek help and actually gave birth to her daughter. So there's a variety of ways that to enhance the storytelling and create a world instead of you go to a movie theater, watch a movie, then that would be it. Now, there's no really the real ending of it. And this is so special because it's using a strategy called transmedia storytelling, and it's been used in the commercial world for many years. You know, if you think about Star Wars, if you think about, you know, The Matrix, or for kids like, you know, Pokemon, you know, it you've got hundreds of characters there, and they reoccur. It's a story world, and it's not one single story. And this is the very first time this strategy is used purposefully for pro-social purposes, for health promotion and social justice. And the third unique feature here I want to point out is the multilateral partnership. I think anybody who works in health education or health promotion knows like you have to establish collaboration with all kinds of partners. And we were lucky to be collaborating with NGO partners at national, regional, local levels, as well as the researchers. I think our previous presenters talked about the importance of doing formative research and conducting focus groups. The producers did also conduct focus groups with the target, the young Latino local the youth, from local communities, to make sure the storylines, the words coming out of these characters would really resonate with their target audience. I myself and also Dr. Arvind Singhal, based at the University of Texas at El Paso, were brought in to help with the evaluation. So that's what I'm going to be focusing on. But overall, this is considered as using the strategy called entertainment education, really embedding social and health issues in the entertainment programming to achieve intended outcomes at the multiple levels, not only individuals but also communities. And this is the overall kind of a very simplified version of how that might work is narrative persuasion for health promotion. Basically, you're trying to reach out to the target audience. So you have the intervention or program exposure, and then hopefully it'll lead to your intended outcomes with some direct exposure, but more importantly, perhaps through a indirect path of content and social interaction. And from years of research, we know interpersonal discussion is very, very critical. So for our research, the program evaluation, we really focused on these three aspects. So program reach, audience engagement, and the intended impact. And this is an overview of very complicated research design, because as you can imagine, this is a multi-layered kind of entertainment experience, entertainment and narrative experience, and try to capture that as much as we can over a month and over a longer period of time is pretty challenging for us. So what we did is we adopted a multi-phase and multi-method approach. We used the Google Analytics and also some widget tracking with NGO partners to look at who are coming to ESOSAI's website to visit, and where are they coming from, and how many people are coming from, and to look at the traffic, web traffic, basically. We did it over 9 months. And then we also conducted a viewer survey right at the end of the season premiere in 2013, and look at the audience self-report of their engagement with the content of the show and also the intended health outcomes. And then after that, we conducted a lab experiment, really trying to figure out, is this way of telling the story making a difference or not? Or if so, how much difference can it make? So we actually created four different versions of the ESOSAI story, essentially the same messages, but we had a non-dramatic narrative text, sort of in the form of news story, and we had dramatic text, which is the script of an abbreviated version of the ESOSAI, and we had an abbreviated version of the online drama, and we had a transmedia version of it. So they're essentially the same content, just a different way of telling that story, and then we had a control group. We really wanted to find out if there would be any difference. And then we also tracked in terms of the interaction between ESOSAI and the viewers on social media. The show was promoted on four very popular social networking sites, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. So look at some of the content and also social network, sort of dynamics. And also some participant observation in-depth interviews with some young Latino couples in terms of how watching the show might influence their decision-making, sexual decision-making. Given the limit of time today, I'll highlight a few things from the first three components of the program evaluation. So here, this time last year at APHA, I presented particularly on this site, because it was health geography, looking at the role of location in health, public health. And what we did is we were able to use the data from Google Analytics in 9 months' time to look at overall the volume. It was hundreds of thousands of people coming to ESOSAI's website. And especially there were tens of thousands of viewers coming to visit even after the show ended, in the several months after that. So that shows the potential of this way of creating, you know, the entertainment show for health promotion, having the possibility of more sustainable and cultivating, you know, a fan base to create a hopefully longer effect, a positive effect. And so this one shows a map, and the coloration shows the number of viewers or the number of visitors to ISOTA's website. And the more closer to purple means more people coming from that state. So the most people were coming from the states where they have the highest Latino, Hispanic Latino population or Hispanic Latino share of the population, and of course it covered the entire United States. And we were also surprised that there were another people coming from another 163 countries in the world, including I think 30 to 50 countries in Latin America. We were also able to look at within states at the city level. So within California, we were able to find out almost half of the visitors in California coming to visit this website actually came from cities with both high Latino population and high poverty rates, which, you know, of course, this is what we're trying to, again, reach, right? This is a bar chart showing the program exposure for our from our viewer survey. So the left side shows, you know, overall, this is they watched at least 20 out of the 24 episodes. Almost a third of them actually watched the show more than twice. And the orange bars shows the entire sample, and the gray bars shows the private, you know, the target sample. And also on the right side, you're looking at the exposure to the transmedia content. And it's quite surprising that it's pretty high degree of exposure. I'm going to skip this part, but this is really, we're trying to capture the narrative engagement from, you know, getting attention, understanding the storyline, and feeling immersed, and feeling like the characters are realistic, and being engaged cognitively and emotionally. And this is showing like the, some of the scores and multiple dimensions, and it's basically right on the mark, and they're very well engaged. And also character identification, they felt like they really knew these characters, and the ones they really liked were more on the positive side, you know, having positive sort of behavior and messages. And the ones they really didn't like were like abusive, you know, boyfriend, the rapist, and the guy who actually gave one of the characters HIV, so like irresponsible sexual partner. We asked them, you know, for this to work, it has to be entertaining first, to be educational, to have that educational effect. So they essentially gave a 5-star rating across the board. Overall story appeal, enjoyment of the web novella, enjoyment of transmedia content, the quality of production, and they were crying out for more shows like ISOTA High and more seasons from ISOTA High. And this is from social media. So I like my labels. So we look at, you know, the target audience, and if they, you know, if they are in the generation where you can sign up for this social media and they haven't done so, like I call them hermits, and we didn't have any hermits in the sample. And if they are already on Facebook, Twitter, you know, Tumblr, Instagram, but they didn't like follow ISOTA High or like ISOTA High, I call them slackers, we didn't have any slackers in the sample. And if they are there and they just clicked on following, which means that they can get the feeds from ISOTA High but didn't do anything else, they're the lurkers. We had some of them, not a whole lot, but most of them are endorsers who liked, you know, ISOTA High, you know, fan page on these social media platforms, or are following them, and disseminators if they share, you know, or retweet or reblog, and also advocates. So beyond that, they actually do something to interact, and they comment on it, they post things, and they mention. So quite enthusiastic group, and this is of course everybody in the viewer survey consider themselves a fan of ISOTA High. Again, the possibility of cultivating a fan base to make it more self-sustainable as a health program. I'm going to skip ahead. This one was trying to show not only on social media but other platforms, face-to-face, you know, short messaging and talking on the phone, and a whole variety of people they talked about the show with. This is to show an example of the impact. Now, this is a result from the lab experiment showing the knowledge of correct condom use across these five conditions and over time. So we had time one was baseline prior to bringing them to the lab, and then time two was right after they read the news story or the script or watched the online drama or transmedia, and then time three is 2 weeks later, the follow-up. And this was an ideal example to show that the result of this, in the case of correct condom use, the knowledge increased not only over time, but in the condition of transmedia, it trumped all the other four conditions. Not every single outlet-dependent variable turned out to be like that. We're dealing with the real world, but this is like exactly the way we had hoped. Also from the viewer survey, we learned that it's not that the audience were not aware of the kind of services, but they never did anything. So watching the show really prompted them to feel like they're willing to get tested and to recommend the services. And they felt like even if they know there are options or services to help pregnant teens, they didn't know where to find help. And after watching the show, we had very high level of likelihood of recommending people to go to these services. And I think this is a quote from a participant. It sums up the viewer's perspective very well. It says, "Ezo's High changed my life a lot because it was so realistic. I learned a lot of things that my ex, the sex ed class, didn't talk to us about, such as abortion and other options. It taught me that I have choices and responsibilities." So in the on the Ezo's High website, they had a comprehensive resources page. So when we found out, especially from the target audiences, almost half of them did visit that resource page, and they could go through like 13 categories and with a really comprehensive resources they could use. There's widgets embedded on the website. Like, this is an example where you can type in the zip code and find local health clinic. And so for all of those people who actually did that, they found the information very helpful. And over 80% of them also shared and recommended the resources to others. So the last slide here is, we're moving forward. So overall, the work we've done so far shows that there's a great potential for using this digital entertainment education and transmedia storytelling for promoting sexual and reproductive health among young Latino Americans. And we wish, as we move forward, we could link the analytics to specific behavior at the individual level. Like, say, I know how many people actually went to the clinic or made an appointment or searched to find clinics. And of course, if we can get funding, I would like to conduct large-scale randomized controlled trials to compare different groups, viewers versus non-viewers, Latinos versus other ethnic groups, younger versus older, over a longer period of time. And then, of course, it's not just about young Latino females. Males also play very important roles. Parents also play very important roles. So all of these things are on our mind. And I think somebody here mentioned mobile. Anna mentioned mobile. So mobile is also a platform we're looking into, because the younger generation is shifting to watch shows on their mobile devices. So that's also a very important direction. So there's an acknowledgement of a large team of researchers and students that made this happen. So thank you very much.
Great. Any questions either for Helen or any of our panelists?
Yes. Yeah. So I have two quick questions. One is not the lab part of the study, but the evaluation of the program as it was delivered, if I understood correctly. How would you describe the design? Experiment, just observing.
Oh, you mean the overall the analytics tracking over time?
Yeah, I mean what was that study design?
Yeah, so that component is really unobtrusive. It's not an experiment because we didn't do anything else that's different. It's just whoever visited the Ezo's High website a month prior to the premiere and during the premiere, and I believe it was 6 months after. We were able just to track how many people were visiting, from where, how many are new visitors, how many are returning,
so
where they're coming from.
Data for that part.
What's that?
You didn't have any self-reported data for that
No, I mean, that's what I was saying. Moving forward, I'd love to see like the age, gender, ethnicity, and to actually have pop up. We actually are experimenting with a new tool so we can pop up and then engage them to get more information because, you know, we can find more.
So just a matter of follow-up questions, did you have in any of the sessions, right? Did you have behavioral outcomes in addition to knowledge?
We had behavior intention. Uh-huh. Yeah. So in some cases, we did have a good result, but right now, because of the limited sample and the data we have, not directly behavior yet. That's why I was saying, I was talking to the NGO partner, we did the widget tracking, right? I said, do you have any information that, of course, ID identified? If we can see like the zip codes they put in, and that's the actual hardcore health information seeking behavior, we can say this is, watching the show led to that, you access the widget on the website. Nope. We could not do that, but we are working on that. Okay. Yeah, that'd be great if we can do that.
A production like this costs money and all that, but now that I see something network and all that, do you have any idea if the series make money also for the network? Because I think that's also a value, in producing this type of, if you can say, look, we can do an educational program, but at the same time,
commercially successful. We work with the producers, the executive producers, and the writers as well. I think they're doing so well because it's been 3 seasons already, and the 3rd season was signed like I think 2 days after season 2 aired. So that I think that itself says a lot. This is transmedia, so there's still new things in the development right now, so that itself also says there's no additional investment to continue this initiative.
Questions for any of our 4 presenters?
I'm curious to know if you don't have any additional toolkit material that goes along with the book of Novella, and I ask because we developed one for mental health, and what we found is that we work primarily with the counties in California, and we found that many of them said this is a great tool, but we want something else. We want either a fact sheet or some other tool. So I'm curious if that came up with you guys.
I can answer that. Just what we did, we produced the photo, just a straight up print photo novella for Stanford University a few years ago on Alzheimer's. And then we produced a guide on how to use the photo novella in community settings that we had. It was almost like a little curriculum on how, you could do role playing or you could, there's just all kinds of different ways that you could use it to teach and engage and start discussion. And it was like a teaching guide. But that's the only thing.
We haven't. I mean, I think that was one of the findings in the publication that we did was that we did pretty good distribution with our print team, but it might have been helpful in terms of evaluation if we had some sort of a structured way of giving this to health educators and have, so that they would have some way of using it and maybe identifying how they could evaluate the effort. So I agree with Anna that developing some kind of a tool might be helpful.
We did, it depends on what, like the one we did on the asthma with Oscar, we collaborated with a couple of the community clinics and we actually inserted an action plan for the asthmatic was part of the insert. So sometimes in the inserts you could do that. On the one we did on medication adherence, the insert had the places to write all your meds down and gave you some questions to ask your doctor, questions to ask your pharmacist. So depending on kind of what you want to do with it, you can do different things. So you could tailor it a little bit and giving them some instructions. And this worked quite well for the clinics that used it because it had an action plan.
Another thing that occurred to me, did you have comments about that? Another place that you might look we produced like 18 fotonovelas for Kaiser, and we did print fotonovelas, and we did digital, not interactive, but just digital fotonovelas with voiceover, and they house them in their websites, and then they connect on their website, and then they connect it to other material and doctor videos and action, you know, so that you might want to look at on the website for it's the Central California Kaiser, because they've done a lot more, you know, more active
packages. We have time for one or two more questions. Yes, sir.
What's the ballpark cost for development of digital photogallery, picture photogallery?
A digital photogallery?
Do you want either a picture or a digital thing?
For us, once we did the photonovella and we wanted to do this, you can't always use the people you use in your voice count. It's like going from silent movies to this cost us about $50,000 to convert it from it, and because we had to go to the studio, you know, when you're hiring different kind of talent, etc. But that's what this cost to do on a digital once you've created the photo for what we've done.
I think you're, because Mel works for the university, is that your indirect, with your indirect cost as well? Because, you know, university, it's just more costly to do stuff in the university. Our digital cost that much. But, you know, it's just more, you know, I don't have the 50% indirect cost.
I'm sure that the effort that we did on our production when we had our print version, and then together with we hired the talent and just had actors reading the script and developed a web version. We didn't go ahead and create DVDs like Mel did, but we had a working web version. I don't know how much more the expense would have been for creating a disc, but as health department, we didn't have as much overhead in just creating that. It's been a little bit of time, so I don't remember how much we had to pay.
Yeah, I think when it was all said, this is a while ago, both the print and the web novella was like $35,000. Both. So, you know, it's still not very cheap, but it's there's a lot of moving parts.
One of the really nice aspects that Mel does that I'm not sure he emphasized in his presentation was that they go into the community and they use people from the community in their production. I think it's just fantastic.
Thank you, Cammie. Because of where we're located at USC, it's predominantly Hispanic, so we really try to use local talent, and we pay them. So we try volunteers, and it doesn't work too well. It slows the process down. You really need to use professionals. And so we work with the community partners, and so there's a local playhouse by our campus, Josefina Lopez. I don't know if anybody saw the movie Real Women Have Curves. Well, Josefina, who wrote that, has a playhouse just a few miles from our campus. And she helps us a lot with our scripts, but a lot of the local actors go there, and so we use that talent in him. Most of them are in here, so we're able to work with the community and pay them. A lot of local talent.
Yeah, we work a lot with I work in two places. I produce them in Portland, and I produce them in Santa Fe. And in Portland, we work with a local Milagro Theater, and most of our talent comes from Milagro Theater. And like now, they took one of the diabetes pieces that I did years ago, and they turned it into a play, and it was hysterical.
They did a really good job.
You can do a lot of fun stuff with this. So you know what, I think the bottom line is, you know, we're trying to help messages. It's got to be entertaining.
Well, that's why I like your point.
It's entertaining.
Entertainment first.
You know, as a pharmacist, and all of you have prescriptions filled, do you know that paper that comes off the computer in your pharmacy hand? I mean, that stuff gets discarded. It's bad stuff. I mean, it covers their, you know, themselves because from a legal standpoint. But the material is really dense. It's way over the head of the population. We're handing it to them. I watch people throw them away. They don't look at it. So, I mean, if you're going to do this stuff, it's got to be at the level for the people, and it's got to be entertaining and helpful.
So I think that's a great note to end on. I think the theme of this whole panel is around entertainment and storytelling as a way to convey important health messages. And so before we thank our speakers and wrap up, I do want to do a plug for a webinar series that Tammy and I both work on, sponsored by the Health Communication Working Group, called Health Communication Matters. And we've had, I don't know, 12 or 13 webinars in that series. It's free. And some of our previous webinars have been on Foto Novella and on engaging young people in developing and designing their own video stories. And there's a sheet handout at the door with more information about that. And you can access all the previous webinars online. So please join me in thanking our fabulous panelists.